Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your recap episode for this week's Ryder Cup. Joining me to break it all down, Greg Ducharme is here. Hello, Greg.
What's going on, Rick? Nice to be here. It was a more exciting day than I expected. I'll just say that. Although I'm still disappointed. It got close.
We are probably moments away from getting Patrick McDonald. He is wrapping up a written obligation. We'll add him in when he gets in here. But Greg, you're right. I mean, the last 2 days were exciting. The Europeans are going to win back the Ryder Cup. 16.5, 11.5 is the final score. But remember, Saturday was a split. Sunday was a split. That 5-point differential is the same differential that came from Friday's two sessions,
which is just unbelievable, because you watch Friday morning and you think, okay, this is a rout, this is over. That's what you're thinking Friday after the first day. And the Americans fought hard. They obviously got blown out in the opening session. It turns out that foursomes were the biggest difference here in this whole competition, because the Europeans won those two sessions 7-1. That's a 6-point difference, a significant advantage for the Europeans in that. And that made it really hard. It put the U.S. in a big hole. And then there was after the first session, there was a lot of red on the board. And it looked like they had opportunities to really turn things around and get right back in the mix. And the Europeans they just proved to be really hard to put away. And they're able to get these half points, which lead to big fist bumps, you know, big celebratory half points. And for the U.S., half points don't do any good at that point. And for the Europeans, that's what they need. So it kept their nose out in front and allowed them to really lean on their stars, where the American depth wasn't enough. It became a top heavy fight.
Emotional half points go a long way on Friday. They go a long way on Saturday, and they certainly went a long way on Sunday. Let's add in Patrick McDonald to the conversation. Patrick, number one, welcome to the show. We will get your camera focused on you here eventually. How are you doing, and how is your email inbox?
I'm doing great. My email inbox, not so well. I got signed up for, I think, 12 or 13 cat newsletters last night.
Patrick gave out his email on the podcast last night.
And I learned from my mistakes. There were a lot of them this week on my end. I will own up to each and every one of them throughout this show. And hat tip to the Europeans, and hat tip to you gentlemen for joining me on this episode.
Yeah, well, Patrick, we'll throw it right back to you here, because Greg and I were just alluding to the fact that it was a Saturday split. It was a Sunday split. We got the moment on Sunday, and we'll go through each match, but we got the 15-minute window where it felt like it was closer than it was. It probably really wasn't ever close to the Americans flipping it, but there was a situation where you looked at the board and said, if everything holds and we flip this one match, the Americans can win it. Now, spoiler alert, that's obviously not what happened, but at least the last 2 days felt a lot more competitive than Friday did.
The hoping hour, Scott Hansen. I know he's working today on Sunday, but they paid him overtime for that 1 hour. And it really did with, you know, Brian Harman was making a charge against Terrell Hatt. And you had, Sam Burns, he's probably not going to beat Rory, but he's putting up a good fight. And that middle portion of the lineup, you saw it from kind of just the matchups yesterday, that if US could make matches 5 through 10 really mean something, there's an outside chance. And obviously they got 2.5 points, the Europeans did, from Hovland, Rahm, and McElroy. And match number one, really, if that falls in the US's favor, I don't know if it changes anything, putting an American flag on the board first instead of the tie, but it felt really momentous for Rahm to get on the surface there. And two, I mean, he almost made that 90 footer for Eagle. That was a ridiculous lag putt. Scottie Scheffler not being able to get up and down. And that one, I think, took some wind out of the sails, but you had Cantlay come through. Homa, like, if Homa doesn't make that putt, it's over really early, but that putt really extended the drama, so to speak. And oh my gosh, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, all these guys are making putts when they've stunk for the past 2 days. And yeah, the hoping hour, I'd give it more than 15 minutes. I'd say like 30 to 45. There's a moment where it was a little tense.
Admittedly, I thought this could have been over 90 minutes into the start of the day. It took like 6 or 7 hours, which was great. Greg, we're going to go through each match, but before we do that, like, just walk me through, like, how do you avoid coming out of the gates so slow, right? And I don't know if it came through on television, but there was an absolute just lack of anything here on Friday. And it was just one-way traffic. The Europeans were everyone felt like the Europeans were going to run over the Americans, and they did. Other than that, Saturday fine, Sunday fine. How do you avoid that? Who's like, is that a preparation thing? Is that, you know, playing on an international match, you know, for the first time in a while? I mean, it was so bizarre.
Well, it was not bizarre to me. Now, you'll notice on my betting card, I said the Americans would win the first match. That was actually my biggest concern, because 9 of the 12 Americans took 5 weeks off leading into this event. If you're preparing for a big event, I don't care what it is, the Masters, the US Open, the PGA, the Open, you're not going to schedule 5 weeks of rest ahead of that. You know, you're going to play competitive golf to shake off some of this rust. We've seen it with Brooks Koepka, and I know he did play the week before, but Brooks Koepka playing the week before a major championship has gone really well for him in the past. You may see guys take the week before off, but they've played a couple of weeks before that. You know, there's competitive time where guys have to kind of get ready. Even if you go to the start of the calendar year, where December's kind of slow, many of the big stars who perform really well at Kapalua have played in a Hero World Challenge or a father-son or an event in Dubai, or they've played in something leading in to gather a little bit of form. The Americans didn't do that. Now, last Ryder Cup in Paris was the exact opposite. The players had just finished the FedEx Cup playoffs and they're gassed and they looked tired. Now we swing the pendulum all the way to the other end of the spectrum and take 5 weeks off. It's too much. I mean, to me, you have to prepare for this event like you're preparing for a major championship, because it's an event you have circled on your calendar. And I think the Europeans did prepare that way and the Americans did not.
Hard to argue. All 12 Europeans played in the BMW PGA Championship, which was what, 2 weeks ago.
A similar flow.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the Superfeet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Well, we got off to a fun start. John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler, Patrick, were the first group out. That's your big boys, right? John Rahm for the Europeans. He has gone out now first on Sunday in three consecutive Ryder Cups. You have Scottie Scheffler, the number one player in the world, despite his struggles here in Rome this week. And this was back and forth. Scottie played well enough and looked like he was going to capture the full point, which by the time this match was wrapping up, you could see the paths, right? It's like election night. You can see the paths to victory. The American path to victory almost certainly, Patrick, required a full point from Scottie Scheffler. John Rahm makes a birdie on 18 to have this match and get a half a point out of it. The rest was kind of hope theater because I think the only path was getting this full point from Scottie.
This match summed up the 2023 Ryder Cup for me. You think about Scheffler, those really early misses on the greens. He had two misses inside 6 feet. The Americans as a whole didn't really putt too great. You think about someone like Xander Schauffele, who had a poor week on the greens. And you look at the finish. Rahm, when he has to, makes a birdie on 18. He steals half a point from the Americans. He takes the flag off the board. That was really the name of the game. And we talk about rust and the first day. I was okay with the 4-0 foursomes loss. U.S. stinks in that format, going back however many Ryder Cups you want to. But the competitive rust came to me, I think, finishing off that afternoon session when it should have been 3-1. It should have been 5-3 Europe going into Saturday. And from there, really anything could happen. And for them to lose that session, to fall 5 points behind, it was really kind of emblematic in this match. You see the back and forth nature kind of. Rahm made the big putts, number one, the lag putt on 18 as well. And Scheffler, he played great. He really did. He looked more like the world number one, but he missed short putts on the front nine. And when you're trying to beat John Rahm, you probably can't let those go. He did make a nice one on 15 to grab the lead, but Rahm just gives you no breathing room. He sucks up all the oxygen. He's always in the hole. And yep. The half was just, like you said, Rick, Scheffler needed to win this match for the Americans to have a chance. And the half, Rahm knew how big it was to fend off the world number one like that.
He does suck up all the oxygen, Greg. That's one of the things, and especially in this format, is super, super dangerous. He makes shots when he needs to. He's clutch. He's any variety of adjectives you want. He caps off another great Ryder Cup.
Yeah, there's so much energy that he brings to the table. And Scotty, who last year really got the better of him early on in the last Ryder Cup, rather, he won the first four holes. And for John Rahm, coming out making a birdie right off the get-go was huge. And that has happened all week, right? The Americans have lost the opening hole all week. But the thing about the putts that you mentioned, Patrick, you know, even on one and two, it's not that he missed those birdie looks, but there were very uninspiring efforts. They didn't nearly miss. They came up short, which is a sign of nerves. And I do think Scotty did a really nice job battling back and getting the speed of the greens eventually. But you get in a little hole and you get into a dogfight like this, which it was all the way through. Scotty threw a lot of what he had at him, but Rahm never backs down and continued the spirit and is able to finish off going, you know, birdie par birdie in order to get that key half. So whereas it's birdie par par for Scotty Scheffler in those last three holes. So this was disappointing. It's hard fought. I almost wonder in a strange way if the Americans should have thrown Scotty Scheffler or one of their top players against knowingly you knew it was going to be Rahm or McIlroy in the opening match. And I wonder if it was a good decision. It would have been way out of the box, but if you put somebody that's not one of your heavy hitters out there to open, does it give you a better chance somewhere down the board to get a win out of Scotty Scheffler and his really solid play?
The second match was a continuation of Victor Hovland's great week, a 4-3 victory over Colin Morikawa. Patrick, that puts Victor's week, all five matches, one of only three players who played in all five sessions, one of two Europeans who did it, Rory McIlroy, the other, 3.5 points for the Norwegian, and it was a loud 3.5 points. There were lots of big wins, a lot of emotional stuff. It was nice.
Best fist pump in the game, and everyone got a front row seat to it too. Just the veiny arm popping out. Sometimes he goes with the double fist, just a strong, strong fist pump. And really, when I look at this match, he put it on Morikawa pretty good early and often, but number seven, the par three, when Morikawa's kind of trying to come up for air and get a little life in it, Victor hits it to 20 feet above the hole. Morikawa's in tight from 210 yards, 3 feet. You think, okay, he'll grab this one, get two down, maybe snag the difficult eighth and the par five. Those are holes that are, you know, pretty back and forth. And Hovland just pours in the 20-footer, and it's like, all right, this has been Victor Hovland for the past handful of months, you know, even the last year, so to speak. And it was just a great performance all around. I had some questions about his short game. I think they came up a little bit in the afternoon session yesterday, but I think he was just a little tired from playing so much golf and got a little lazy. And I mean, he hit some ridiculous chip shots and bunker shots throughout this competition. And you couple that with his ability to rise up in the moment is really special. We've seen it time and time again from him. Big putts, the 18th there on Friday afternoon. You go back to the Tour Championship, you go back to the BMW Championship, the Memorial as well. And it's really, really cool to see someone build up to this moment through, you know, difficult times at the Open and falling short and making a weakness into a strength and just ripping the guy who secured the half point for the U.S. in 2021. That was definitely on Victor Hovland's mind that he wanted a little payback to Colin Morikawa, these two guys who came out at the same time, and he certainly got it.
Yeah, that spot there, 7 and 8, I was out there. I thought it was a big moment, Greg, because Colin Morikawa was already in his pocket on 7. On 8, Victor hits a bad drive and decides, after going through three different clubs in the bag, to lay up, and he gave himself a chance to get a half on that hole. He didn't make the putt, but I thought there was a strategic maturity of the way that he approached match play. He actually, him and Shea Knight were trying to figure out what club to hit. They were, it was a weird lie, ball above his feet. And they just, he just said, let's see what he does first. And Morikawa stuffed it. Morikawa was on the green, in two, but there was like a very well thought out way around this golf course, especially in match play, that I didn't necessarily see at Whistling Straits.
You know, you think about that situation and it's, things move a lot slower when you're three up. You know, and that's the situation. He's three up at this point. So let's see what he does here. It makes it easy. And then, you know, okay, well, four might give me a chance to win. What's the best way to make four here? You're not panicking when you're three down. You know, if you reverse the roles there and you're three down, you feel like you got to win the hole. And all he's got to do is give himself a putt to have. And that continues to apply pressure. So it gets a whole lot easier when you get off to a really good start. And Hovland did, and he did it with birdies. You know, he, I think that was the only bogey he made on the day. He was six under in 15 holes. And if you're six under, you're making birdie on nearly half the holes. It's really hard to find a gap if you're Colin Morikawa, especially if you're, you know, struggling a little bit tee to green, not driving it your best. Finding the rough far too often for someone like Colin Morikawa. So yeah, the pressure was applied early and it stayed down, and he has the complete game where little tiny mistakes that maybe at one point in his career would become big mistakes didn't. And that's why he's able to notch some big victories, not just in this match, but throughout the week.
All right, match number three, and Greg, I'll give you first crack here at this one. Patrick Cantlay gets the Americans on the board, 2-1 over Justin Rose. Patrick Cantlay became public enemy number one here in Rome overnight, but again, he rises to the occasion and puts the first full point on the board for Team USA.
Yeah, he played some really good golf, but I'll tell you what, Justin Rose made him earn everything out there. Yeah. And it looked like, you know, there are a couple moments through seven holes, he's two up at the turn. He's two up through 10. He's still two up. He's just kind of hanging in there. And you feel like, okay, that's a point for the Americans. And it felt like it was going to kind of go away early. And then all of a sudden, Justin Rose starts making putts and fist pumping, and it gets really tight. But a great par for Cantlay at 14 to win the hole. And then the birdie for the half on 16, I thought was also a really important moment. And 17 was great as well. An enormous birdie. So Patrick Cantlay was clutch in his last two matches. And it almost felt like once he became public enemy number one, that was actually a good thing for him. It felt like it was a good thing, not just for him, but for the Americans. It really turned the tide. It seemed to wake him up a little bit, which was fun. Yeah.
That's the term I was just going to use, Patrick. It felt like that woke up the Americans. It definitely woke up Patrick Cantlay. I mean, ever since the tweet comes out, I swear he didn't miss a putt. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, he turned into a killer, which makes you wonder, why can't he do that four times a year? And of all the great stories this Ryder Cup produced, I think my two favorite were in this match. You think about Patrick Cantlay, him turning into the villain, him relishing in it, him walking up to every green, him saying yesterday, I've never had so many standing ovations at every tee. It was really nice. And him backing it up with his game. We saw people talk this week and who weren't able to back up it with their game, but Cantlay did. I mean, the hat trick of birdies, this today, Justin Rose never gave him an inch, and the back nine was spectacular. And then you look at Justin Rose, all his friends are gone. It's like, you look at the really young team, Justin Rose, kind of the outlier, 43 years old, the oldest guy in this competition, Sergio, McDowell, Henrik, Poulter, Westwood, Casey, gone. And he came back, reinvented his game, earned his spot on this team, and he was fantastic all week, shepherding Bobby Mack around Marco Simone, getting you know, the afternoon on Friday, that moment he had, the celebration when he went, you, pointing to his teammates, was, I thought, one of the more underrated moments of the Ryder Cup. He's a great celebrator, too. I know I gave Hovland that that remark, but roses to it. And he played some great golf down the stretch, made a lot of big putts, and Cantlay, to his credit, earned it. And it was a must win for the Americans, and it looked like it was going to be easier. But Rose, I mean, he's just tough. He's a tough cookie.
Yeah, job well done there by Patrick Cantlay. Match number four, Greg, is Rory McIlroy continuing the trend of the Europeans getting on the board early, winning hole number one en route to a 3-1 victory over Sam Burns. This was the best Ryder Cup that Rory McIlroy has ever had. He went 4-1. He played all five sessions, and he did exactly what you need your horse to do at a Ryder Cup.
He put on today's round no fives on the card, 6 threes and 2 twos. I believe I counted that correct. So I mean, this was flawless out of Rory McIlroy. And you know, Rory can have a big target on his back. Anybody's going to get psyched up when they get an opportunity to play against Rory McIlroy. And you wonder, with Sam Burns and his nice performance yesterday afternoon, especially getting a little riled up on the very first green, you know, I felt like Sam Burns was gonna show up and feel like, hey, I want to take this guy down. And I'm sure he did, but it was a shaky start for Sam Burns, and Rory didn't give him an inch. And I thought Burns got it together much better late, and this match lasted a lot longer than it probably should have. But Rory and his golf swing looks absolutely phenomenal right now. He was so confident, and you could tell he wanted some revenge from Whistling Straits, and he wasn't going to give anything up. And then you consider what happened last night as well. And I'm sure he was upset, and it sounded like that was all diffused, but we hear from Rory afterwards, I'm not sure it was. And I think Rory used that as fuel, the way Patrick Cantlay used the negative emotion as fuel as well.
Sam Burns, who was, and I'm sure he'll tell you the same thing, miserable on Friday, played much better in his other two opportunities that he got. Patrick, he got the win yesterday. What was that? Yesterday afternoon, I guess. Saturday afternoon. And then at least, yeah, I mean, listen, he lost 3-1 to Rory McIlroy. There's a lot of guys who are going to lose 3-1 to Rory McIlroy. He at least took it to the 17th hole.
When you think about captains and their jobs, it really is to put players in position for success. And no offense to Sam Burns, but of these 12, he probably shouldn't have played foursomes at all, especially in the first match out. His game just isn't suited for it. He's high volatility, which is great for match play, but foursomes was always going to be a tough ask for him. And to his credit today, I thought he played great. Like Greg said, Rory McIlroy was lights out. He probably should have been 9-under through 16. He missed a short one on 13 and another one on 16, where Burns got the match to 17. And yeah, it was probably a tough week for reporting in general between Hatgate and the report that Rory and Joe Lakava squashed the beef when Rory said, yeah, I hadn't met him yet. And all the reporters, they were tweeting out after, that was the maddest they've ever seen Rory McIlroy walk off the golf course. It clearly fueled him. I don't know if he really needed the fuel, maybe a little nitrous to the system is what it really played like, but he had a spectacular week. He took it personal from the beginning of the week. He took it very personal on Sunday, and he delivered. That's what the great ones do. And it's great to see Rory McIlroy, who hasn't been great the past two Ryder Cups. He had a losing record in Paris, wasn't great last in 2021, obviously. And for him to step up and deliver is massive. And you look at the big three, Rory, Rahm, Hovland, 9-2-2 combined, 10 points across to those three. That means your other nine just have to produce 14.5 or 4.5 to win the Ryder Cup. That's what the stars are supposed to do in a Ryder Cup. And all three did it. Hat tip to them all. They played great golf, and they outperformed the American Stars.
First four matches of the day, two wins for the Europeans, a win for the Americans, and a tie. Match number five comes with Max Homa leaking a little bit of oil, Patrick coming down the stretch, but he's able to hold on and finish off Matt Fitzpatrick one up, and he caps off by far the best Ryder Cup of any American, 3.5 points.
He was fantastic all week long. Really the only bright spot, I think, when you look back to this Ryder Cup is Max Homa and him stepping up in the moment like he did at the President's Cup as well. Just seems to have the exact mentality you want. You think about someone like Justin Thomas being an emotional leader. After this Ryder Cup, I'm throwing Max Homa as his vice captain, potentially co-captain in the emotional leader camp. He just wants it. He wants the ball when it matters. It was a very nervy ending. Him and Fitz both missed short ones on 13, that par three. He follows him into the water on 16 when that's the last thing you can do. He missed a short one there as well. But when it mattered, you guys talked about how things are very slow when you have the lead. Well, how about when you're trying to fend off Europe popping champagne on 18 to listen to the advice of Joe Greiner, take the unplayable greenside, get up and down, make the putt. He said his legs were shaking. It's freaking ballsy, man. You have everyone ready to rush on the green to celebrate Europe winning the Ryder Cup, and you hold it off for another hour. It's just huevos to the max, and it was a great week for Homa, and I'm glad he got his singles win.
That's right, Greg. As this thing was shaking out, Fitzpatrick could have put this away, could have put the Ryder Cup away. Max Homa steps up, finishes off a great week, and he's just a gamer, man. He's a gamer. We've talked about the way that he kind of embraces the whole Mamba mentality. We talk about how he has just gotten increasingly better every single year of his career. It's such an impressive trajectory and resume that he's building.
And you think about, we were talking about the Hovland decision on 8. This decision was more impressive to me because this is exactly when things are going really fast. I've got to have this hole to keep the Ryder Cup alive. It's all on my shoulders and I can barely see my golf ball. So what do I do now? And you could have messed it up in many ways. He had the faith in his short game to get it up and down. He had to trust that Fitzpatrick wasn't going to make it as well. But that was a really hard decision in a really difficult time. And he made the tough decision and executed and made it look like a brilliant choice. So good on him. Loved his performance all week. The Americans need more Max Homas. You need that. He's like the Fleetwoods, the Hattons, the Poulters of the past, the players that aren't necessarily your superstars, but your role players that step up in a big way. And the fact that he can do that on a road, on the road, is a really good sign for American golf in the future.
All right, we are going to continue this conversation and chat about the rest of the matches that led to a 16.5, 11.5 victory for the Europeans. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, gents, we're back. I think we can run through the next couple pretty quickly. Patrick, Tyrrell Hatton, 3-2 over Brian Harman. This looked like one that we as if I'm on the American team, we're going to need to be flipped. Even without Harman getting the comeback, there was still a small path to a retention of the United States for the Ryder Cup, but Hatton puts away Harmon 3-2.
Really the story of the week, the Europeans getting off to a fast start and the Americans trying to claw back. Harmon tried his damnedest around the turn, making birdie on the par five to cut it to one, but just a little too late. And Hatton had a great week, 3-0-1. You need people to step up, and he was someone who didn't have a great Ryder Cup record and balled out this week.
Yeah, kind of quietly, 3.5 points for Tyrrell Hatton, tying Victor Hovland for the second most points scored by anybody on the European side of things. Match number 7, Greg, goes to you. Again, Brooks Koepka, you know, if you win that first hole, the way the rest of this sets up, it goes really well for you. Brooks Koepka won hole number one, was 3 up by the time they made the turn, and he puts down Ludvig Åberg 3-2 to get another red point on the board.
And he looked really confident and has been really hard to beat in singles. This moves him to 3-0-1 in singles, I believe, throughout his Ryder Cup career, which is really strong. This is a very intimidating player in Brooks Koepka. There will be many arguments that he should not have been on the bench on that Friday morning. And I can definitely see that argument. And if you're Ludvig Åberg in your very first Ryder Cup and you draw Brooks Koepka in singles, I don't know if there's anybody more intimidating that you could possibly go up against. Brooks got on him early, kept the foot down, continued to make birdies late, continued to hit great shots late. And, you know, lastly, on that last hole, Brooks Koepka flew the green with his driver. I didn't see anybody else airmail the green like that. That was roasted. So, Brooks stepped up today, and the Americans needed it at this point.
Match 8, Patrick, is really where we're running through all the options. You know, where is this final point going to come along? There was a time where the Europeans got to 14, which means they could not lose the Ryder Cup. At worst, it was going to be retained by the Americans, which is like a very weird normal sport type of distinction. You still don't have the cup. You didn't lose it, but it's bizarre. So they were at 14. They're looking for a half a point anywhere. And Justin Thomas is battling Sepp Straka, and things are not going particularly great. I thought that him missing the putt on 17 to put him away and then hitting his drive left of the fairway on 18. I thought Sepp was going to nip him for a half a point, but JT wins the 18th hole and wins 2-0.
I did too. I really thought our boy Sepp Straka was going to be the Ryder Cup hero to clinch it for the Europeans. And wouldn't that be something? But you look at this match and you look at the luxury of getting out to an early lead. JT had a nice approach there on 30 from the rough to set up a birdie, and he added a few more going and to grab that 2-up lead, and then he kind of just held serve. And if you watched this match, you would have thought Hatgate was about Justin Thomas. He was tipping his imaginary hat more than anyone, which was just ridiculous. Straka, really nice late charge. Great shot there on 16. That hole was awesome. That produced some unbelievable moments throughout the week, the chip-ins, the putts, everything in between. 16 down the hill, my all-star for Marco Simone. And JT got his singles win. I think his week as a whole, people will point to strokes gain data and his record as being really bad. He should have never been picked, yada, yada, yada. It's tough when you have to lug around the 10 handicap. That was Jordan Spieth this week. And I thought he acquitted himself quite nicely emotionally. His game looked decent as well. And I was in the Justin Thomas camp. I know people will be coming at those who are in the Justin Thomas camp. I will defend being in the Justin Thomas camp. I think he delivered relatively well.
Justin Thomas, Greg, was obviously one of the big storylines this week, one of the more controversial selections. He played 4 sessions. He got 1.5 points. I think the people that didn't think Justin Thomas should be on the team got enough ammo. And I think the people that thought JT should have been on the team got enough ammo. So here we are with no winners, losers in this thing.
Yeah. I think at this point, it's pretty clear what happened. If you actually watched, it's one thing if you look at the record, That gives you the ammo if you don't think he should have been on the team. But you watch especially the Friday afternoon match in that half, and you see that coming down the stretch, it just was left all on him. You know, Jordan Spieth just I wouldn't go as far as saying 10 handicap, Patrick, but his partner completely bails out. And Justin Thomas nearly wins the match by himself and ends up eking out a half point. So that was a difficult situation. And it leads me to this question. On Saturday afternoon, you have Jordan Spieth playing the way that he is. I know this is a duo, but is it a problem to have a package deal like this? You know, Justin Thomas is playing some great golf. Does he have to play with Spieth? Can we mix that up a little bit? Is there somebody else on the bench who's playing a little better or maybe can light a spark? Maybe we get a new pairing that works out really well. I don't know. I think we're a little restricted in our decision-making with some of these pairings, feeling like you have to go with the great team. And I thought Justin Thomas played a lot better than his record this week.
Freaking preach, man. I said, Zach Johnson, there's going to come a point where you have to split up a team. And he just didn't have the wherewithal to do it. I was going to say something else. I don't even know what wherewithal means.
Your eyes were darting around, and I was like, just say it.
he didn't have the balls to split up Spieth and JT. He didn't, and he should have. I probably should have said spine, like Joseph Boza said. But
that's right. Spieth, just go for it.
Spieth was a liability the first 2 days. I know he played better today, but he was bad. He was in his pocket the last five holes of that match Greg was talking about.
Last five holes?
And even when he played well, yeah, he just didn't. He would do it for like four holes at a time. It was just not remotely close to enough.
No, and yeah, it was a tough week for the boys club.
Yeah, we'll get to him in a second. Match nine, Xander Schauffele, Greg, 3-2 over Nikolai Højgaard. Højgaard did what kind of Ryder Cup rookies do, which is 0-2-1, a half a point. He was the fewest amount of points earned for anyone on the European side. And Xander Schauffele, we were talking about this last night, finally gets on the board 1-3. That's a big story to me, but it is being, he is getting so much cover from Patrick Cantlay. He's getting so much cover from Zach Johnson. He's getting so much cover from Justin Thomas. The story should be that Xander, like one of the top 10 players in the world, was a no-show in Rome.
And, you know, it's really important because we have this mindset where we're going to completely stick with our pairings. And I understand you have Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. They're going to play foursomes together. They've never lost in foursomes. You got to play them together. But, I think it was pretty clear that Patrick Cantlay was out playing Xander Schauffele, and Xander goes out Friday afternoon, and it should have been Cantlay, because Cantlay probably should have been a five match guy. And again, another player who I felt played better than his record. And, I kind of gave an edge to Xander. I thought Xander coming into this week was going to play really well. The putter was really strong entering this week, but something in that 5 week layoff, all of a sudden it cooled off and it went from hot to ice cold. So he didn't really do anything, didn't make much, but was fortunate to get by Nikolai Højgaard today, even after another slow start. Big wins on 5 and 6 with birdies, and then the other win on number 7 with a par there. That was really important, and finished off strong on 15 and 16 as well. And look, we still needed this point, so it was a big point, but we could have used a little more action earlier in the week out of Xander.
Yeah, needed the point, got the point. Jordan Spieth in match 10 tied Shane Lowry thanks to winning the 18th hole with a birdie. Much too little, much too late for Jordan Spieth's production this week, Patrick.
Yeah, it was a really disappointing week. Kind of comes to an end in a disappointing way on 18 with everyone just being held back from the celebration. Spieth is the lone American there in the arena, but he got off to a really nice start. I think he was 4 under through 5. He eagled the 5th And it was like, oh my gosh, of course Jordan's going to do this now where he just shows up on Sunday. But he's still without a victory in the Ryder Cup singles. I think he tied Fleetwood in 2021, got the tie here today as well. And look, I know it's tough. He just had baby number two. He wasn't part of the scouting trip. He didn't play since the tour championship like the rest of the gang. And you could tell the form was just off. He tried his best. He did make, to his credit, a number of big putts, you think 15, but he gave it back with the, you know, trying to be kind of cute there on 16 as well. So it was kind of vintage Jordan Spieth roller coaster, but it was a cruddy ride.
Yeah, he had the dubious distinction of being the last match out there. So like the entire world is literally just surrounding the green on 18, and it's already decided everybody wants to get this over with, and Greg, they've just got to kind of play this out and get out of the way before the celebration starts.
The putt Jordan Spieth hit, did you see how quickly he started walking after he hit it?
He beat it to the hole. He beat the ball to the hole.
He whacked and just kept walking. And it was, that was, you wouldn't, if you just turn that on, you'd think this hole's over, and it was already over. He just whacked it. Now he's going to get it, but he actually ended up winning the hole. So if you missed any of that, it looked very different than it turned out, but that was, disappointing. I think it's a disappointing have either way, because there was a legitimate chance that it came down to Jordan needing a full point there. And losing 16 and 17 that's when it mattered. So that was the more important moment. Those were the more important moments that were a little bit disappointing for me.
All right, I'm going to jump ahead here. Match 12, Robert McIntyre beats Wyndham Clark 2-1. Again, the way it was panning out, there was a chance that this anchor match was going to end up being a deciding factor. But because of what happened in match 11, that was not the case. So match 11 is where this was decided. Tommy Fleetwood and Ricky Fowler So Tommy wins, Greg, 16. Tommy wins 17. The way that he won on 17 was with a concession. Ricky Fowler gives Tommy a 2-foot, 8-inch putt that is effectively for the Ryder Cup.
That was on 16.
Oh, I'm sorry, 16. All right, because they continued. They continued the match. My bad. So that effectively ends because Tommy is now 2 up with 2 to go. He has guaranteed a half a point. That is all the Europeans needed. And I tweeted this out. Like, I'm fine. I give a lot of putts. I'm fine with these guys giving a lot of putts. I need to see the Ryder Cup winning putt go and touch the bottom of the cup.
Yes. And, you know, even in the nice guy match of all nice guy matches, like this one was, there are simple rules that you got to abide by. And one of them is, you got to see birdie putts go in, and you got to see putts to win the match go in. And if you have simple rules like that, you know, it's not, I can't believe he, nobody would ever say, I can't believe he made him putt that. He should have putted it. He should have putted it.
If it was 6 inches, nobody would have said, I can't believe he made him putt that.
And here's the other argument too. He kind of, it's not what he thought, but he took away the moment sort of from Tommy Fleetwood.
Correct. Yeah. He took away the winning moment in general.
So if you're concerned about being the, you know, doing the right thing, being the nice guy, this doesn't apply there either. So I think that's a great point, Patrick. But ultimately, the great disappointment in this match is what happens on 16T. And Ricky Fowler sprays it right and rinses it. And basically it was over right there. Tommy Fleetwood stripes one right up the middle of the green. This was so disappointing. And I'm watching this thing unfold and I'm saying there is a real chance that this comes down to Ricky Fowler.
Yeah.
And this is just a terrible situation to be in. I don't know. I don't want to see it. I wish Rom won the full point. I'd rather Rom win the full point so I don't have to deal with that. Because, you got Ricky, who's the sick guy, at all. He's way in the back of the pack. And reportedly, look, can we believe reports? No, clearly not. But he reportedly wanted to be in the last spot, which is, does he want to be in that situation? Probably not. So it was really tough. And I thought it might come down to that, but I didn't see it going that way with a tee shot. That's just, it's over. I'll just send the exit stage right. We're out of here, boys. We're going home.
Ricky Fowler, he only played on Friday in one session and he played on Sunday. He was battling, the stomach bug and all that fun stuff for the week. So he goes 0-2, but Patrick, Tommy Fleetwood goes 3-1, gets a nice fun partnership with Rory McIlroy. And then he gets to effectively put the winning point on the board. They would actually have to play another hole before that match became official and it would get on the board. But he mathematically locked it up.
He's just so good on this stage. Foursomes, he's undefeated still, I believe. And his ball striking, he's really a complete game with elite skill sets, approach. He's a fantastic driver of the golf ball. The putter can betray him sometimes. I think we saw that a little on 15. He kind of wiped that birdie putt from 8 feet, where I thought he really could have applied the pressure on Fowler, but I guess he knew what he was doing. He knew he didn't have to. And so for Fleetwood to be this good on this stage in the moment, holding, I mean, that eagle putt, the celebration yesterday, 12 out of 10, this today. And it just makes you wonder, how does he channel this more on a week-to-week basis when he's in the moment? Because we have seen him, unfortunately, fall apart down the stretch with a tournament in his hands. So could this be finally the breakout moment for Tommy Fleetwood where he becomes a multiple time PGA Tour winner? I would love to think so. His skill set suggests it. His ability in these moments suggests it, but we just still got to see it. And for Fleetwood to come through, you know, with Rory, another great pairing on home soil again after 18 with Molly Wood, it's cool. He's the most likable guy on the PGA Tour, in the top five at least. And you can't, as an American, you can't see him like chip in and make a putt and be like, "God, dude, Tommy Fleetwood, what are you doing?" You're like, you're yelling, "Go, Tommy Lad!" Too. It's like, it's a weird moment. It's like, yeah, it's like Mama Kelsey in the Super Bowl. That's kind of how it felt with Tommy Fleetwood.
I caught myself singing, "Tommy, Tommy, Tommy, Tommy." They got some good chants out here. So the Europeans win back the Ryder Cup, 16.5 to 11.5. In what was pretty lopsided, obviously, from the get-go around here. This comes down, Greg, to me, to the performances of the best players on both teams. So just to kind of throw this out there, Colin Morikawa, 1 point. Xander Schauffele, 1 point. Scottie Scheffler, 1 point. Jordan Spieth, 1 point. Okay. Now, contrast that to Rory McIlroy, 4 points. Victor Hovland, 3.5. John Rahm, 3. And then whoever you think the next best player is, Hatton, 3.5. Fleetwood, 3. The big dogs from across the pond lapped the big dogs for the American team.
In many cases, they were playing against one another. But you look at the advantage that the United States had coming in, part of that was their depth, which I think you saw today. You saw that show up today, and who knows if this had been closer, what would have happened with some of these later matches. If we came in with a little more hope, perhaps some of these change. But you could see the depth. There was a clear advantage for the United States on paper. On Sunday singles, they needed a huge lopsided day. But if they didn't, I think they would have been in a really good spot. But you look at what happens in team golf, and all of a sudden you get these things separated a little bit, right? And these great partnerships become really important. And the Europeans always seem to find this where they have partnerships that are complete buzzsaws. You look at what Rahm and Hovland do in foursomes, They shoot 6 under, beat Scheffler Burns, one of our featured pairings, beat them 4 and 3. And then in the morning, what did they do in the morning? Rahm and Hatton shoot 4 under. They in the two matches they play in foursomes, they shoot 10 under par. You know, this is a buzzsaw. They chip in, they hit the flag stick. They both contribute. And it feels like our teams don't both contribute. We can't garner any momentum. And then you have McIlroy and Fleetwood, or Fleetwood Mac. They're 9 under. So, you know, in their two foursomes matches, they win 2 and 1 in both of them. So, I mean, they really had to play well to win both of those matches, and did. And when you put two teams like that on the board that are near impossible to beat, it becomes a really tall task, because you're going to have some tight matches that go your way or don't go your way. You're going to lose the 18th hole, as the Americans always do. But overcoming, you know, guaranteed wins, it's a really hard thing for the U.S. to do.
Well, Patrick, guess what? We get to talk about this for the next 2 years, and we get to, demand a task force. We get to say, burn it all down. Or we can say, you know what? After one bad day, it wasn't all that bad. Like, where it's always weird when you're in the moment. In 6 months, where will this fall on that spectrum of horrible defeat that should have never been allowed to happen, or, hey, they got us on American soil for the 7th straight time?
I think we'll look back and probably look at the schedule and the lack of reps coming in as the main issue. You look at the day one score, 5.5, 1.5, 9 players on the U.S. team not playing in a competitive tournament for 5 weeks, and people will forget about all the details and they'll kind of hone in on that one. But I kind of look at the captains, and I give credit to Luke Donald. I don't want to speak ill on Zach Johnson. Enough people have done that, where if you're Luke Donald, you probably know where Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay are playing in foursomes at opening session. And KP told me as much. Rory wanted Xander and Cantlay. And so you're putting your aces in the hole against theirs, and you have faith in your guys to give them zero momentum at all. They take them, you know, a 5-0-0 team in international play in foursomes, hand them their first loss in four ball that afternoon. Everyone and their mother knows Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth is going to be playing first. You counter with, who was it? Victor Hovland and Tyrrell Hatton, another great duo there. And it felt like Luke Donald really, he didn't move the right pieces on the chessboard. He controlled the entire chessboard. It was kind of Zach trying to play, you know, try to catch up, and he never did. And when he might have added a little nuance to his lineup with the four ball on Saturday, it was a little too late. And just a hat tip to Luke Donald. I thought he was brilliant. But when we look back on it, I think it'll be the rust factor that people will blame, which I don't know if it's fair or not.
All right. Before we get out of here, Josh, why don't you put up the betting board? It wasn't pretty. 3 picks for the United States to win. Obviously, those are losers. The top U.S. scorer ended up being Max Homa. The top European scorer obviously ended up being Rory McIlroy, which both Kyle and Patrick had. And then, Patrick, your best bet, I was not here for this show, was Tommy Fleetwood over Ricky Fowler. That's in regards to points, correct? That was the...
Correct.
Yeah, so no brainer there. Job gets done. Tommy Fleetwood over Rory McIlroy by a mile, because guess what? I scored as many points as Ricky Fowler did.
Congratulations, Rick. Rick and Ricky. We're proud of you.
There we go. The Ricks scored the same number of points. All right, gents. It's been an absolute pleasure. Guess what? Sanderson Farms next week. So turn your attention.
You're all right,
real quick, because we have to go on HQ. But Greg, real quick, Ludvig Åberg and Nikolaj Højgaard are in the field for next week. Is there any chance those two go to Jackson and play?
No. Maybe. I mean, they're so young. It's so hard to see that. There's a chance. There's a chance. Less than 50%. I'd say 35% chance they play.
I'm getting ready for a Monday. WD has been replaced with I don't know, Briny Baird or somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep our eyes peeled.
TPJ.
TPJ. All right, gents. It's been an absolute pleasure. We'll continue to keep this rolling. Obviously, CBSSports.com is where all the additional content's coming. I'm watching the Europeans are doing their presser right now, so we'll figure out what they say, and that'll all be available online as well. But appreciate the support, the time zones, and everything that we figured out throughout the week. Producer Josh is all the hard work behind the scenes. Patrick McDonald, available on Twitter at Amateur Status. Greg Ducharme, available at The Real GFD, and you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.